You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Chris Cherry.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Are we married now?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Legally binding.
Ooh.
Today, we're going to be talking about the fifth serial of the 13th season of Doctor Who, The Brain of Morbius, which consists of four episodes that aired from January 3rd, 1976 to January 24th, 1976.
Joe Facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Felicity Cousinitz of the Flopcast for buying this DVD for us.
Hey, thanks, Felicity.
Again, you can check out the Flopcast at flopcast.net. Thanks so much, Felicity. It's always great to get them on DVD, and then you can watch all the special features, which I did, which is great. So, thank you.
And for a while, it was a mystery.
Yeah, we didn't know who it was, because it came in the mail. Usually, we get a little receipt thing that says, thanks so much, Watchathon of Rassilon. You guys rock. DVDs are great. And then it says who sent it, but this time we didn't get any piece of paper, and it's because Amazon forgot to do it. Felicity said she sent one, but it did not come through.
She could be lying. Have we confirmed that this is true?
Nope. I need receipts, Felicity. I need them receipts.
I am rescinding my thank you until we get some fucking receipts.
Just show us the receipts, Felicity.
Where's the receipts?
We need the receipts.
Fucking receipts!
Receipts! Do we have any guests on this episode?
Yeah, we do. We have a guest.
Oh, okay. Today, we have a first-time guest, but a long-time fan of the show. It's Tony Bermuda Heath!
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm super happy to be on the show.
We really wanted to have you.
For a very long time.
Yeah.
Like, when we started this podcast, we were like, this should be a podcast with Joe and Tony. But I don't know how Chris got involved.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
There's really not very much to say. I have a Doctor Who podcast that I do with my husband.
What's that called?
That's not important.
It's not important. Everyone please go check out It's Not Important. Leave a review on iTunes. I know your husband. He's sexy as hell.
He's okay.
I'd be him.
This like went to a weirder place than I thought it was gonna go.
Really? I knew exactly where this was going.
I didn't think we were gonna like assume that there was an alternate fiction. I don't know why I didn't assume that, knowing the way that we all are.
That was totally oblivious on your part.
I really hope this is no one's first episode. So let's explain what's going on for those who are probably like, what? What is it? What's going on? Isn't this a show about Joe and Chris Cherry? Tony's my wife. And she's the normal co-host. But the reason we've changed it up is because usually Tony and I are together recording these things. And Chris is in New York being all walking there.
Joe thinks it's the funniest thing.
I do.
Do you know what he does when we're at the dollar store?
No, not the dollar store. The Dollar Tree, which is different.
One is a store. And one is a tree.
Oh my god. He's everything. How much is this? We should get this, but I don't know how much it is. Every time we go. Every time.
When obviously it is a tree.
Yeah. Oh, it costs a tree? Now it makes sense.
Ugh.
I get it now. I understand the concept of the establishment.
Yeah.
But yeah, so usually me and Tony are together. Today we are not. Tony,
oh, I'm so sorry. What happened?
Oh, we broke up, but we're going to keep doing the podcast for the fans.
You wouldn't stop asking how much things were at the Dollar Tree.
But so now me and Joe are together until he says one too many times that he's walking here.
I don't know how close I am to that, but I got to be reaching that point.
Thin line. Thin line.
Is the line where the line what you walk on there?
We're getting divorced.
Hey, Tony, you want to get married?
Why not?
Cool.
You guys are making me nervous because I think you have a better relationship.
There are people that ship us.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
Hi, Christina, Marie, if you're listening.
You have good chemistry as hosts.
But yeah, I am in New York and Tony's still wherever she is. I've mentioned on this podcast previously, I am pitching a show tomorrow. So by the time this goes out, I will have already, failed and, cried a lot.
No, you'll have done great.
I'm still hopeful.
What? You will have succeeded and cried a lot.
That's probably true. Like, oh no, what have I done? This is a bad, bad idea. Why did I think I could do things?
Aw, you can do things. We're doing this podcast.
Oh yeah, you're right. We've done, 80-something episodes of this? So.
Yeah.
Not you.
The fiction is dead now.
The fiction is dead now.
But I'm still the co-host for this episode.
You are still the co-host. And Tony, you're still the guest, so act like it. So speak only when spoken to.
Speak only when spoken to, but also speak more because you're the featured person. So basically, you're going to have to monologue every once in a while.
I was going to say, which guest am I? Because it depends on the guest if I'm speaking more or if I'm speaking less.
Just make sure we don't skip anything.
Right. Okay. Now I know which one I am.
Before we jump into Brandon Morbius, first off, I'd like to say, hey, Chris, what's going on? Maybe we should at least talk to you a little bit because you are technically, you're not the guest.
I'm not the guest.
But you know.
I mean, you talk to Tony sometimes.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like we could, at the end...
Dude, yeah, plugs. Yeah,
plugs, and then 100% drop the pitch. But I'm good. No, yeah. It's as you know, we're in New York, and it's way too hot.
Way too hot.
It's so hot.
It was hotter than I realized. It's okay. And then I touched my back, and I was like, oh my god. I am just dripping with sweat.
Which makes me angry. Not that you're... your sweaty back. I don't care. But it makes me angry because that's one of the many reasons that I moved away from Texas was that I hoped stupidly that it would be less hot, and it is not.
Did you bring it with you? Yeah. Maybe it's just you're hot.
That's true. I must have. Can't believe I married you.
It was the second happiest day of my life.
What was the first happiest day?
When I married Tony. Okay, cool. You were definitely a downgrade. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's fair.
That's no, judgment against you. That's just saying Tony's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
If you for a second suggested that I was an upgrade from Tony, I would have gotten offended.
You would have gotten divorced earlier.
Exactly. Don't say that shit about Tony.
So, in addition to talking about you, let's talk about something else before the Brandon Morbius. Some stuff has happened we should probably talk about. The trailer dropped. So, we have a teaser and a trailer.
All right, let's talk about the
clothing line.
That's true. Let's talk about the teaser. There was a teaser. Okay. Let's talk about the trailer.
Well, there's one good thing about the teaser, despite it being so short that it basically doesn't make any sense and hardly exists. Everyone was eating in it.
They were.
It was for me personally, and I appreciated that.
The Doctor looks like the Flash in it for some reason.
I mean, is that supposed to be regeneration energy, or...
Or, I don't know. Is, the idea that she's... Is she clock-stopping?
It's too vague to make any sense.
I couldn't tell what was happening. Was, she fucking with stuff and then it was, changing?
It seemed to be, but
maybe
it was not very...
If it was regeneration energy, then she's regenerating all of the objects.
There did seem to be... There was no pizza, and then there was pizza?
And I know, there was, it was a magazine that changed, right?
Yeah. She definitely gave him a new magazine. Which was one that Matt Smith reads.
Yeah.
And another episode.
Was it a Chibnall episode?
I don't remember. I don't think so. But it could have been. But at the beginning of the ad, they have an empty pizza box, and then the doctor comes, and then suddenly it's a full pizza box. Which I would be kind of angry, because I, we ate a whole pizza, and we're full, and then you gave us another pizza. We have to eat this other pizza now.
Now I gotta be responsible for this pizza.
Exactly. I've actually had that happen in real life in a way, where we ordered a pizza with, some toppings on one side and other toppings on the other side, and then they accidentally mixed them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh shit, we gotta make it again. And then they just gave us, they fixed it and made a right pizza, but they had the mismatched pizza.
Yeah.
So they just gave us both of them.
But we just ate both of those pizzas, though.
Yeah, that's true. But we didn't need two pizzas.
Yeah, but we definitely ate two pizzas.
And in, you don't see it in the teaser, but they definitely ate both pizzas.
All right, moving on. Trailer. Go.
The trailer was good. I mean, we watched it on my TV, which isn't the best TV.
I've since watched it.
And I haven't.
Again.
I said I was going to, and then I didn't.
I watched it on my laptop.
I watched it on my phone at work. Unless you're Matt Golden, in which case I certainly did not. Just kidding, he definitely watched it at work too, so it's fine.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
I was like really upset when it came time to say hey, thanks, and I didn't get to say it.
You can thank Felicity.
All right. Hey, thanks, Felicity.
But you know who really thanked you?
Well, you rescinded it.
Yeah, mine stands.
That's you true. Rescinded
That's
your
thing. I did rescind it.
Until we get some fucking receipts.
Receipts. Where are the receipts, Felicity?
Do I see receipts? No.
No.
But I want to. Give me them receipts.
Where are they?
Just give it the fucking receipts. Give me those receipts.
The show became Comedy Bang Bang so fast.
Well, that's what happens when you're the...
Exactly.
You're the co-host. So you guys really like the trailer?
Yeah, I liked it. It's like, I mean, it looks good. Like I said the other day when we watched it for the first time, there's one thing that I'll give Broadchurch in that it always looked gorgeous. And the trailer looks really nice. Like all the visuals that I've seen so far, like all the Entertainment Weekly stills and like that trailer, everything looks gorgeous.
I was a little underwhelmed.
Huh. Yeah. Go on.
I don't know, I expected something a little more weird and fantastic, but it was mostly just establishing shots of rather generic looking places.
Yeah.
But they were pretty.
They were pretty, but like, they're nothing like special. It was just like one like sort of starship junkyard is what it looked like. Mm-hmm. And that was like the first one. It was the most interesting one to me. And the rest was just like, I don't know, a desert, some weird like old tankers, I guess.
But
just
they're
like,
weird.
They're not that weird. I mean, it's weird that it's like, I don't know, because I don't know what they are. But they're clearly just like something like in some random location. Like, it's just like some sort of, I don't know, industry thing.
Yes, exactly.
It's not like sci-fi, it's just some...
It's just fi.
Yeah, it's just fi. So I don't know, there's a lot of just, and it was just a lot of shots of them walking places.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anything that was like, look at this wondrous... crazy shit, which I kind of was hoping for.
I will say I really love the tagline of, like, the universe is waiting.
Calling.
It's calling, yes. It's a really good summation of, like, the thing that I like about Doctor Who, of just, like, the joy of exploring the universe. And if that's going to be, like, a central sort of theme for this season, I'm really on board.
Yeah, that's true. I do. I agree with that.
But that's the thing. If that is it, then everything they showed me was like, well, this doesn't look like
the
wonders of the universe. It looks, yeah, looks like a couple of small locations. Though, I mean, they did look well composed and colored, pretty.
Definitely like the color scheme.
It's very warm.
We have one more thing to talk about in regards to New Who stuff and the trailer.
Well, I mean, we've talked about it on a previous podcast, but we can mention it again. Because we've seen it more clearly.
Is the sonic screwdriver. Yeah, now that I've seen it more clearly, it's even more confirmed. It definitely looks like a vibrator.
I've seen people be like, why are people complaining about that? Why are they saying, is it just because she's a woman, blah, blah, blah. But like, no, it specifically looks even more like a vibrator than it ever has before.
Yeah, it looks much more.
Yeah, it's a weird design choice.
Like that curve.
What else is it for?
Right? But it also looks really... like, banged up, though, too. It looks like an old vibrator. It looks like a vibrator that was left behind by ancient aliens.
I do like the kind of, like, exposed crystal-looking bit of it.
Have you seen the toys? There was somebody posted a video of, like, how the toy worked. And, like, the whole thing lights up. Like, yeah. Throughout the whole thing.
Well, that's pretty cool. It's definitely going to be, like, used that way, too, is the thing.
Wait, what?
Yeah. If they're... there's a toy and they're selling it.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant on the show.
No. It's gonna get used that way by someone at least once.
I mean, all the other ones have too.
Chris knows from experience.
Honest to God, there is a certain section of the Doctor Who fan community that's like, thank God. Because they were getting so pointy. There are so many stick-em-a-bobs and things on them.
Maybe now would be a good time to talk about that episode.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Let's talk about The Brain of Morbius. Written by Robin Bland.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Not really.
Not at all. No. Fun story behind that. This serial was originally written by Terrence Dix. And, yep. Like, there's a character in this serial called Solon. Who was not in the original script. It was a robot character. And then he went away on vacation with no means of contacting him. Because
the robot?
He's No, Terrence Dix. Terrence Dix went on vacation.
They were gonna cast this robot, and the robot went on vacation. And they're like, fuck, we wanted this robot.
Exactly.
But it's in his contract.
He's on vacation.
Yeah.
So they just had the robot take a nap for 4 episodes. But no, Terrence Dix went on vacation. They had no means of contacting him because he's like, I'm on fucking vacation. Leave me alone. So they were like, we can't afford to have a robot, and we can't get in touch with Terrence to rewrite it. So we're just going to have Robert Holmes rewrite it. And then he basically rewrote the whole thing from page 1.
Because Robert Holmes at this time is the script editor. Like,
yeah.
He's the creative director, sort of. So it's less like they just got him because he was around. Like, it was his job to work on scripts anyway. Like, yeah. He was rewriting other scripts, too. Like,
yeah, and it's not like they were just, like, shitting on Terrence Dix, either. They were just like, we had to do something and you weren't here. But Terrence Dix came back and they were already, like, starting to go into production and everything. And Terrence Dix read it and it was like, I mean, it's not bad. It's not what I wrote. And I don't think it's better than what I wrote, but you gotta do what you gotta do, but it's not my script, so just go ahead and just, you know, release it under some bland pseudonym, was his exact words, bland pseudonym. So they're like, fuck it, Robin Bland, which he was mad about at the time, but now he thinks it's funny.
I also think it's funny.
On the DVD, on the special features, he's the one telling this story while giggling the whole time. So no hard feelings. And I think he wrote the novelization eventually as well, and like kept Solon and everything. Yeah. Didn't like change it back to being a robot or anything, which he probably could have done if he wanted to, I guess. Anyway,
anything's possible.
No, it's not.
You can, but when you're writing any story, you can put a robot in it.
And you should.
Yeah. I think that's a thing that not enough authors think about.
Do you think this would have been a better serial with a robot?
I mean, am I being Tony right now?
No, that fiction is dropped. What do you both think? Do you think it would have been better with a robot?
Honestly? No.
No, unless the robot was played by the same guy. Like, unless, yeah. like that character is so much more interesting than a robot. No offense to robots.
I mean, I think so too. I mean, I like the original idea. I think it would have been a lot more serious if they'd done it his way. And the way it is now is a lot more comedic, and I actually kind of prefer that. But, like, the original idea was that, spoilers, I guess, but he's making a body. And the reason, like, it's such, like, a Frankenstein mismatch of, like, weird stuff is just, like, the robot was just taking whatever it could and didn't know about beauty or anything like that. So it wasn't, like, trying to make an aesthetically pleasing body.
Whereas,
just one that works.
Yeah, whereas was Solon, or Sauron, right?
Sauron is
Lord of the Rings. Solon knows about beauty because he has very nice hair and, like, a goatee going on.
Oh, yeah. He is rocking his do. But let's start at the top. First thing we see is something we've already seen, and I didn't realize we'd already seen it before. There is a bug monster crawling out of a wrecked spaceship. And I was like, that's a pretty good design. Not realizing that we've seen it before. It's a mutt, which is the mutants from The Mutants.
Ooh.
It's the reused costume. I think it's even supposed to be the exact same creature.
The titular mutant?
Yeah, the titular mutant.
Oh, wow.
Not the one that turns into a gay space ghost.
No.
But the bug ones, which I did not recognize because I almost completely forgot that serial because it's not very good.
Oh, no, it's not. Hey, Julian, I just realized.
What?
You never said what this episode's called.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Episode 1, which I have called Mind Your Head.
All right. See, look at me. Co-hosting.
You're a great co-host. Because that's the first thing that happens is the bug guy's crawling out of the wreckage, and then this Igor-looking motherfucker shows up with a giant hook hand and squishes the bug.
I also want to say that was me deciding to come out of Tony's shadow and do my own thing, because Tony wouldn't have told you.
No, she wouldn't have.
Tony would have noticed. Tony did notice.
I did notice.
And then didn't say anything. And I was like, at first I was like, what would Tony do? And I thought, no, I want to know what he has.
But this hook hand guy, his name's Kondo, though they sometimes call him Condor.
I've heard it both ways.
Has cut off the head of this bug creature. There's a lot of heads in this serial.
It's head heavy.
Which is the next thing we see. It's just a stone head.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Solon shows up with his wonderful looking Prince Valiant hair. I'm stealing your notes now.
That actually wasn't even for him. It was for his Igor assistant.
Really? Oh, they both kind of have a bob.
Exactly.
Solon pulls it off a little bit better than Kondo. So he brings in does he bring in the whole body or just the head? I think he just brings in the head.
I think he brings in the head. Just the head.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, Solon's really disappointed because this head is not...
I think it's too small.
Too small.
Can't fit the brain in there.
Also, it's a bug.
I mean, to be fair, though, when we see the actual thing, it's, again, aesthetics do not matter.
Yeah, that's true. Then the TARDIS arrives, and the Doctor gets out and starts yelling at the sky, / the Time Lords, because he thinks they've once again hijacked his TARDIS and made him come here.
Sarah Jane doesn't think so. She's like, you don't know how to drive this thing.
He's like, I know the difference between a regular fault and those fucking dickheads.
He doesn't.
Though, I mean, this is tied in with Time Lord, so it could be a Time Lord.
Yeah, it probably hijack. Was. But also, even if it wasn't, he would have said that anyway. Sarah Jane says that because I think the last three places they've stopped, he said that.
Yeah.
This is just the one time he was right. Time Lords sent me to this Arby's.
Don't even like Arby's.
No one likes Arby's. Joe likes Arby's.
I don't like Arby's.
Wow, wow.
Joe hates Arby's.
Oh. Tony likes Arby's.
Oh.
Well, I don't like Arby's. There's just no Lion's Choice around here.
Lion's Choice is a restaurant in, I guess, the St. Louis area that tastes exactly like Arby's, but everyone there says it's not.
It's not at all like Arby's, and you have to go to Arby's when you're not in St. Louis and be like, this isn't what I wanted at all. It's almost but not quite like the thing that I wanted.
Lion's Choice tastes exactly like Arby's.
It does not taste the same.
I don't like roast beef, so I don't care.
When I go to Arby's, I get a chicken sandwich.
Ew.
Yeah.
They have a decent chicken sandwich.
At least they have a sandwich with nacho cheese on it. Like, get that one. It's not nacho cheese, but that's the consistency.
I mean, it's not like just a plain chicken sandwich. It's like a nice breading and there's some cheese on it.
Things are going on.
It's a good chicken sandwich.
We should get sponsored by Arby's.
Yeah, they're going to want to sponsor us after I've shit all over it.
Hey, Arby's. Fuck you. Come sponsor. That's what you like, Arby's, right?
They'll take what they can get at this point.
Although if Lion's Choice wanted to sponsor us, that would be cool.
Can we get sponsored by, like, good things?
Lion's Choice is the best, like, food ever.
Sponsored by Lion's Choice.
Yes. Number one choice from lions.
Do lions like roast beef?
Piggies do.
So shouldn't it be Pig's Choice?
Yeah, but they don't want to say that because then you wouldn't go.
Which toe is it that likes roast beef?
Oh, this little piggy went to market, right?
That's your thumb.
Oh, I'm not taking my shoe off. Imagine that this is a foot. All right, this little piggy.
That is the weirdest looking foot I've ever seen.
I mean, yeah.
Your big toe is so much, like, shorter than the rest of your toes.
I know, and it's further back.
Yeah, it's really
like
weird.
Like a dew claw. Opposable thumbs.
Question though, who starts counting on their thumb? Anyway, continue.
But like, if it was a foot though, wouldn't you count, start with the big toe?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm using my hand to approximate a foot.
So that little piggy went to market.
This little piggy stayed home. This little piggy brought my middle finger.
Okay.
Fuck you, Arby's. Arby's just wants to be dominated.
Sorry, Tony, you're not the co-host. You can't stop this train from going.
No, it needs to go. It's already stopped.
Yeah, you can't stop this train from stopping. This is not the train from nonstop.
All right, then let's pick up the pace.
Remember nonstop?
Barely.
Let's talk about it for 20 minutes.
The camera was always moving in that.
All right, so where are we in the show? All
right, so let's get to the things happening. So the Doctor is like, I'm not going to do anything. He just sits down and pouts. And Sarah Jane comedically is annoyed at this.
And blows her raspberry? Stops.
Yeah. Well, first she like kicks her leg back like, pugh, and then like turns around. And then I think she's like, come on, let's do stuff. And he's like, no. And then, yeah, then she does the raspberry thing. So she's like doing a whole routine.
Yeah.
Has she been getting progressively cuter? Because I feel like she's been getting progressively cuter.
She's definitely been getting progressively cuter. I think both in fiction and out of it, when the show started, she was a serious journalist. And she's, at this point, given that up. She's given up all pretenses of, like, being a journalist and having an adult job. And just wears cute outfits and throws fits.
It's great.
What's what she wants to be doing?
She's found her true calling.
Yeah.
She's living her best life.
She's like, well, I'm going to go adventure without you. Fuck you. And the Doctor just plays with his yo-yo. But she finds the wreckage While the doctor is dusting the TARDIS, Sarah Jane screams because she's found the headless
bug body.
The doctor says he recognizes this place, which I'm assuming is just sort of a hint that Time Lords are involved, because I guess we must be kind of close-ish to Gallifrey.
He says it and then he gives an exact number, which sounds very far away, but I don't remember what it is.
It's like some sort of billion. But like, I guess the stars are similar.
Yeah, he says that he recognizes the stars, and he gives a number that's very far away in miles, but for planets, it's relatively close.
And then it proceeds to start raining on them, and it is the fakest looking rain I've ever seen. They really? Just overlaid. Yeah.
And there was lightning that was just incredibly bad.
That as well. Because that was over the wreckage shot, right? The lightning? Well, there was lightning over the wreckage, and there was lightning over the castle that they're going to go to.
By the way, have we said that it's Carniat in this show? Has the show said that it's Carniat?
I don't remember that name, so maybe.
Because they say Karn.
They do say Karn.
Like, yeah, because it's the sisterhood of Karn. Like, yeah.
So this planet's called Carniac?
No, yeah, it's called Karn.
Wait, what?
K-A-R-N.
That's the name of the planet?
Yes.
Well, what's Carniac?
No, Carniac is nothing.
I thought you said Carniac.
I said, have they said Karn yet?
Oh, I thought you were
Carniac
saying a word.
Is the bit that Johnny Carson used to do when he would wear the hat and he would hold up a envelope and he would be like, and he would do a joke and he would open it up and it'd say, does this say Karn yet?
Hat's a nice way of saying turban. It was a turban, wasn't it?
A turban is a kind of hat.
It's a kind of hat. Yeah. That bit's kind of racist, isn't it?
A little bit.
All right, going to go to this castle that they see, and then we see.
But it is Karn.
It is Karn. The planet is Karn. I don't know if they've said Karn yet, maybe, but I don't know.
It really just sounds like you're saying corn, but with an accent.
It's Karn.
It's Karn.
What accent is that, though? Is it like a southern accent? Karn?
That could be a southern accent.
It's Karn.
No, but I've heard it, so it's either southern or midwestern.
It's probably not this western.
Ask your sister. Oh yeah, it's Karn. She knows all about corn. That's a joke for me and Tony and your sister.
No one else.
Not even me, and I'm the co-host. Which I mentioned because, like, it's a thing of the weird thing of watching the show, like, you watch it. In New Who, the last few seasons of New Who, Karn became more of a big deal. Like, and it's all sort of based on the serial. But, like, watching it retroactively, we're like, oh, this is, like, mythology. But it wasn't at the time. It was just a random planet.
Because we see the first sister of Karn as they're climbing up. She just creepily watching them, and you're supposed to be like, what, who the hell is that? And it's the one Karn lady, the second in command,
the one who can't keep her eyes open at a reasonable amount.
She keeps them more open, right?
Yeah, they're more so,
more open than is reasonable.
Yeah.
She looks like she is trying to do an impersonation of Zooey Deschanel all the time, but she's trying really hard.
So
someone
she,
told her
is
like,
she the old girl?
No, she's not.
No, I mean, Zooey Deschanel's the new girl. Is she the old girl?
No, she's
no.
not. But, like, someone told her, like, hey, when you do that, you look like Zooey Deschanel. And she was like, oh, okay.
But, like, we don't linger on her very long, because then we immediately just go to the castle, where we see Solon reanimating the bug head, and it's really gross.
Yeah, the castle's great. The castle's very... The whole thing is a Frankenstein riff. So, like, the castle looks very standard, but mad scientist castle. Very, like, Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, it's the castle that your car breaks down in front of, and then everything goes to all hell.
Apparently, that was almost entirely, like, the set designer, too. Like, that wasn't, like, he wasn't told, make it look Frankenstein-y. He just did it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, we're leaning into it. Okay. Why not?
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
It's a good aesthetic.
It is. This whole serial is very... It's moody, but it's so fun at the same time. It's so, like, dark comedy the whole time.
But it's also really goofy all the time.
Yeah, it's really goofy and really dark all at the same time.
Yeah, it's the tone that it's striking is very specific.
And I think it nails it.
Honest to God, I love, because I love this serial, spoiler alert for the end, for Final Thoughts. This serial kind of is the thing that I want Doctor Who to be all the time. Like, not all the time, because I want Doctor Who to constantly be changing and doing all kinds of different things. But it's sort of this kind of tone of, like, really goofy, but sort of dark and moody, and really bug-fuck weird at the same time. Like, that's my personal ideal Doctor Who tone.
In the DVD making of, the guy who plays Solon, well, he's like, I think what makes this serial work, and what I try to do all the time, is that It's goofy. It's silly. You're aware of that, but you play it real. And that makes it even better. Like, you just accept the weird, crazy, silly stuff, but play it like it's real.
Well, and then it's terrifying at times, too.
Yeah, that's true, too. So he's like, but yeah, that's what he's saying. So, like, when you do get to the darker moments, that works.
Yeah, it all still lands.
You know, it doesn't just be like a goofy thing and then suddenly it's a serious thing. It there's a nice mixture throughout the whole thing. Speaking of Solon, this guy has been on the show twice before and in Doctor Who three times, but on the show twice. He was in the War Games. Was he a Time Lord? Yeah, he was a Time Lord, right?
Was he a Time Lord?
He was the Steve Jobs looking guy.
Well, no, he wasn't a Time Lord.
Right, he wasn't a Time Lord.
He was the whatever the people who are running the War Games were.
The head guy of that.
Yeah.
And he was in The Crotons, which I don't remember his character at all.
I don't remember his character at all. And I was also on that episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
I wasn't in the serial The Crotons.
Chris is like 80 years old.
Wouldn't it have been weird if I was in the serial The Crotons and then never mentioned it in the podcast episode where we talked about The Crotons and it just came out now?
Yeah. That'd be weird.
It would be weird.
It'd be very weird.
Yeah.
I don't know how you pull that off.
I don't know.
You're going to have to do it for a future serial.
Yeah.
So get on it.
Yes.
But he was also in Doctor Who, Dalek Invasion Earth 2150 AD. I think I got that name right.
Yeah.
But he's like the sleazy guy, which he was really good at. And he's sort of sleazy in this, but in a much more... Because in that one, he's like a sleazy... I think he might even have been American in it. I'm not sure. But he's like the guy in the trench coat with a gun and like...
He's so sleazy, he's American.
Yeah, exactly. But in this, he's like sleazy, but like... Also, like, Shakespearean classical kind
yeah,
of guy.
Yeah, and also just...
classical sleazy.
Yeah. Classical sleazy, while also being a mad scientist.
Right, exactly. He's like, you know, I'm evil. But in, like, Dalek Invasion Earth, he was, like, chewing on, like, cigarettes and, like,
Hey, girl, I'm evil.
Yeah, I'm gonna stab yous. I'm just saying, I think he's a fantastic...
I'm gonna stab yous. Con.
I think he's a fantastic actor. Because he's played at least three different bad guys. Maybe four. I don't remember Crotons. But, like, I've not recognized him once. He's been so distinctly different every single time. And, like, memorable in all of them except for the Crotons. And I don't think that's his fault. Crotons is just...
Yeah.
A little wobbly.
There's a flame.
Yeah, Bug Eyes goes to talk to an old lady. And this is when we sort of fully see the sisterhood of Karn.
Karn,
which... I only knew from New Who.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't 100% sure when we were watching it, but I'm pretty sure I was like, are those the people from that Eighth Doctor thing? And yes.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah. Yeah, they are.
They were also in a 12th Doctor thing, right?
Yeah, they were in Yeah, at least that one. I think her name is Ohelia or something like that. She comes back in Series 9.
There's a sacred flame and it's going out, basically.
Sacred fire, sacred flame. That's the chant.
It took me a minute to figure out what they were chanting.
And it's encased inside of a wall behind a big Hyrule shield from the Zeldas. I kind of like the design of the inside of it, which is it's like a big opening where the flame is supposed to go, but there's a very small flame. But then it like sort of tapers down to hold a goblet where the juices go into the cup.
Yeah.
Well, it's the elixir from the wall. That the flame is melting the wall and it goes into the cup.
I just want to say really quickly that Sacred Fire, Sacred Flame sounds like a Stevie Nicks song.
I'd listen to that.
Oh, yeah, I'd listen to the shit out of it. Sounds really good.
Someone make that song and then we'll play it on our podcast.
And by someone, I mean Stevie Nicks.
Yes, please.
Stevie Nicks, record Sacred Fire, Sacred Flame. Fuck you, Arby's.
I don't know how much, like, exposition we get here, but, yeah, the thing makes elixir that goes into the cup. They drink it. They live forever. It's
yes.
The elixir of life. But...
And they also are the Time Lord's dealers.
Because I felt like they were like saying, this is what causes them to live forever and regenerate and all that shit. But apparently that's not the case.
No.
No, they only use it in case of an emergency. The Doctor says that like he has the moral high ground of like, yeah, we would never try to live forever. That's just rude.
Well, specifically the way he says it, and we'll get there later, but... Specifically the way he says it is like, you get stuck being old. I can become young again, so your method sucks ass.
Yeah.
It sucks being an old person.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that he's arguing against is the idea of never changing.
Yeah.
And so he's like, no, Time Lords, no, we change all the time. And you guys don't, so we're better.
The Sisterhood of Karn.
We don't even want to be in your stupid club.
So the Sisterhood of Karn fears change. So they're the Doctor Who fans?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I can't tell, like, still watching the serial, if the Sisterhood of Karn is misogynist or feminist. It's that thing where you have, like, they
planet
have...
Planet of Women?
Yeah, Planet of Women a little bit. Or it's not even a Planet of Women, it's like, but it's like a sort of society, and they seem like, they seem like a cool, functioning society, and they have this secret to life, and they, like, the characters are all written, like, I don't know, they have, it seems like functional, and at no point do they pretend, other than saying that they don't change, but their whole deal seems, like, functional and cool, and they seem to have power. But on the other hand, it's all pitched really weirdly. They have this weird kind of witchy aesthetic. Very culty aesthetic.
And they have to have a man come in and fix their problem.
There's also that.
Which is just... And it's a very simple solution.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate.
And I'm pretty sure the Doctor at one point calls her, like... Derogatorily calls her matron or something like that.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Deep thoughts from Chris Cherry.
All right.
Tony, as a woman, how does this make you feel?
I mean, I like them well enough, and it makes, I think the flaws that they had were reasonable, like, the reasonable flaws that, like, a human being would have without being, like, really stereotypical. I didn't think about the fix with the flame. That's an interesting take on that. But yeah, overall, I'd say it's not so bad.
And that could be more of a, sort of a people... relying on, like, you know, like, mystical...
Yeah, definitely mysticism.
Religion, maybe. Yeah. Instead of science.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the way it was written.
But that's also the thing that we're... That's, like, when you overlay that on male versus female, because that's already kind of a sort of stereotypical thing anyway.
One good thing is, like, you know, spoilers for the end of the serial. I mean, they come out on top, basically. True, yeah. They're not, like, a group of people to be defeated.
True.
So... Even though they are occasionally sort of antagonistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're reasonably flawed.
So yeah, they're little flames going out. And if it goes out, they go out, basically. That's what they say. It sounded like they were like, if it goes out, we all have to die. Like, quickly.
Well, they've probably already been like prolonged so long that without aid, they've only got so much time. Plus, if you're like, either I live forever, or I'm going to die in, like, 30 years. 30 years doesn't seem like a very long time.
Can I say, I'm about to turn 30 in a few months, and it did not seem like a long time.
Didn't feel like your whole life?
No, it didn't.
Well, it is, though.
That's yeah, and it didn't. I hope it's not my whole life.
Your whole life to this point.
Yeah.
But they think, they're worried that, because Bug Eye saw the Doctor, they're worried that he's a Time Lord come to steal their... the remaining bits of their elixir.
Because they've decided to stop sharing.
With the Time Lords. Because they're running so low. So let's go back to Solon and Kondo. Solon comes in from somewhere. I don't know where. And catches Kondo in the act of looking for his arm. Because presumably Solon took his arm and is like holding it ransom. He's like, I'll put it back, but you gotta, you know, be my Igor. It's not a great system. Why would you take an arm and be like, I'm holding it hostage and you have to do what I do, do what I tell you to do, but in replacement he gives him a, like, wicked-ass weapon for a hand.
Like, but it seems like, I mean, it seems like it doesn't work that well.
Like, as a hand.
Yeah, it seems only somewhat functional. He's only really got, like, the two claspers.
Mm-hmm.
He can't even pretend his hand is a foot.
That's true. But, I mean, he could kill him. Find his arm, and then go somewhere else and find somebody to put it back on.
He threatens to do that.
Yeah. Why did it take him so long? Oh, right, Kondo's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kondo speaks in, like, caveman. Like, Kondo happy, Kondo sad.
Kondo have mixed feelings.
Kondo unsure, needs to think.
Kondo has social anxiety.
But the Doctor and Sarah Jane show up. There's a knock on the door, he opens it. And they're in the pouring down rain, and the Doctor's like, can you spare a glass of water? Which is apparently an improv. There's a lot of improvisation in this, apparently. There's a good handful of jokes. According to the commentary, anyway, where they're like, yeah, that was not in the script. Solon is immediately happy to see them, specifically the doctor, specifically the doctor's big old head.
He has a superb head.
His reaction of, like, checking out the doctor's head and, like, yes, this is a good head, is probably one of my favorite parts of this serial.
He doesn't even, like, say, you know, you look good. He's, like, specifically, like, I like your head. Just very creepy and, like, he doesn't even, like, hide his villainy, really. Though he's trying to.
Honest to God, when the doctor finds out that Solon wants to behead him and put his head on a monster, he's kind of relieved. The alternatives were worse.
We also get another improv here, but doctor basically mentions John Pertwee. He's like, I've had a bunch of different heads. The previous model was sort of gray-haired and people seemed to like it. And then Sarah Jane says, I did. Which was the improv. She's like, she felt bad for John Pertwee. So she's like, I had to say that because I do love John Pertwee.
Aww, that's cute.
Again, there's a lot of heads. The doctor admires the head sculpture and thinks he recognizes it, which Solon is immediately like, no, you don't. There's no way you could recognize it. It's not based on anyone, so just ignore it.
It's got a very Roman look. It looks like a sculpture of some random Caesar.
Is that solely because it's a head statue, though?
No, he's got the hair.
And, like, most Romans, like, classic Roman people I've seen have been statues. So that my...
Well, I wasn't saying that I think the guy looks Roman. I'm saying that the statue looks Roman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was making no claim. Like, we never see the guy, so there's nothing to really...
Not true. We see a picture of him.
Do we see a picture of him? I don't remember him looking particularly Roman in the picture, but the statue... The statue has a Roman look.
So you're commenting on the architecture, not the person.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's really sculpture. Architecture is more building.
Yeah, you're right.
This is good podcasting.
So, there's a scene here where Sarah Jane is on camera that I don't think she realized she was on camera.
Are we there yet? Actually, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, because, well, first off, I want to mention the scene that happens immediately preceding it. Kondo shows up with some wine. Solon is like, just like, what did I tell you? You have to let it breathe. What do you need to do? He's like being so condescending and weird. It's like when you're at a friend's house and their parent is getting on to them and you're just there. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. But like, their parent is just like, you need to go pick that shit up off of your floor. Do it right this second.
I'm so sorry you have to see this.
Exactly. It's very, very awkward. And then when Kondo goes to fix the wine problem, that's when Sarah Jane is doing what she's doing.
She's just, I don't even know what she's doing. She has like her head in her hands and her pinkies in her mouth.
Yeah.
She's like tapping her teeth.
Yeah. She just kind of absentmindedly sticks her pinkies in her mouth. 50% of the reason that I am on this serial, that I chose this serial, was to point out the fact that she does this. And make sure everyone knows.
I would not have noticed it, except that when we were watching it, Chris was like, watch Sarah Jane in this scene right now.
There's no way she knew she was on camera. Because, like, she does it for a bit, she just sticks her fingers in her mouth, wiggles them around, and then, like, realizes, oh, I'm being filmed, and then, like just, like, quickly kind of puts them out and then looks away. You know that thing you do where you're like, oh, I'm fine. Yeah. You know, nope, nothing. Yeah. Oh, whatever. But like,
I wonder if that was an acting choice though. And that's just her way of being like, somebody's getting onto and I feel very awkward and nervous about it sort of thing.
I don't think so. No, I think she was just doing it. And even if it was a choice, I don't want it to be a choice. I think it's so much fun because it's the perfect combination of filming being boring. And never reshooting anything in Doctor Who.
Chris, if that was you in that scene, what would you have been doing?
If I was Sarah Jane in that scene?
Yeah, what is your, like, buffering thing that you do?
I don't... Not that, but conceivably something like that. I don't know. Looking at her doing that, I was like, yeah, that seems like something I would do.
Joseph, what about you?
What's my buffering? Mine's not very noticeable, probably. I play Laser Toes.
Let's talk about Laser Toes.
Guys, I know what Laser Toes is, but I'm so excited everyone else is about to find out what Laser Toes is.
Laser Toes is when I am bored or just zoning out. I like to pretend that there are lasers shooting out of my toes. Well, just one one beam. There's not like five.
Yeah.
It's just coming out of my foot. So it could be foot beams, but...
Show me. Pretend your hand's a foot.
So both feet are shooting one laser beam, and I...
Like one laser beam per foot.
One laser beam per foot, and I will intersect them so they don't destroy things. So the lasers will cancel each other out. So I point...
So you'll form a triangle.
Yeah. Or, if there are other people in the room, they're also shooting laser toes.
Are they?
Yeah. They're also shooting the laser beams, and then I will...
I don't think they are.
They are. So I will position my feet...
I think if you ask them, they would disagree.
In my head, they are. So I will position my feet so my laser beams cancel out their laser beams.
You're doing a service.
Yeah. I sometimes play variations on this. Sometimes it comes from my knees.
The first time you explained this to me, didn't you, like, think that everyone did this?
Did they not?
No.
No.
You've never done anything similar to that?
I would imagine on car trips that there was just a blade that came out from the car and chopped everything in half. Or, like, whatever that's, window length was.
Very violent. You didn't do the running guy or, like, guy on a...
Everyone did the running guy.
Yeah, everyone did the running guy. We're all normal. We didn't do weird stuff, like laser toes.
Listen, if there's someone out there who does laser toes, you may not call
it
laser toes.
Keep it to your fucking self.
No, let me know that I'm not alone.
Didn't you say that your dad did it?
Yeah, I think my dad did it.
Like, not that you learned it from him, that you guys both just did it.
Yes, because we're the same person, basically. So I'm
not alone. Hold my boob.
You just hold your boob? That's your buffering?
Yeah, I had to stop doing it in college when I had roommates and I was like, oh... I didn't realize how often I just sit at the computer with, like, my boob in my hand.
You do a lot of buffering stuff, though. You do a lot of fidgeting.
I do.
You'll open and close things repeatedly, tap things.
I'm doing that right now.
I can hear it. I also hear it when I'm editing the podcast.
I have ADHD. I do a lot.
Have you ever put pinkies in your mouth? You think that's adorable, but you don't know anyone who does that, do you?
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't understand what your point is.
Do you know anybody?
He wants to know why you don't find laser toes adorable.
Why don't you find laser toes like cute?
Whether or not I find it cute has nothing to do with how many people do it. Those are separate.
So what you're saying is, no one else does it, but you do think it's cute.
I mean, yeah, but that is like not because like no Sarah Jane's thing, not your thing.
Well, you don't think my thing's cute?
No.
Why?
Well, for one, it involves toes, which are just gross. We all know this.
Like, I'm still wearing shoes and I'm doing it. It's not like it's... Like I said, it's not coming from my toes. It's just coming mostly from my feet, but like...
But you don't call it laser feet.
Yeah, laser feet's not a good title. Laser toes is.
I can't decide what I like more. The fact that you think laser toes is better than laser feet. Or the fact that you called it a title. Like it was some sort of artistic work.
It is Laser Toes by Joe Heath, copyright 1989.
Like, the word toes is bad.
No, he's right. Well, it's a bad word.
Toes are way cuter than feet. Toesy woesies, you do the little piggies, you got piggly wigglies. But feet are a fetish. Toes aren't a fetish, feet are a fetish.
Are you saying that because you like toes?
No, I just think toes are inherently cuter. Like, as a concept, as a word. Like, you play with the little baby toes. Like, if you have a baby and you're playing with their toes. Or
okay,
whatever.
But like, okay, like, okay. Imagine you're playing with baby toes right now, right?
Okay.
Are you doing it? You're playing with little baby toes? Now imagine the baby's suddenly 40. Is it still cute?
Cuter than feet?
Toes are part of feet, though. That's a weird distinction to make.
I mean, toes are a part of feet. It's the tippy toe part of your foot. Still is. Tippy toe. See, that's cute. There's no, like, tippy feet.
That's why we had to add... we had to add tippy to toes.
That's what
to
I'm saying.
To make it cute. If toes were already cute, we would just say toes.
No, see, toes is just inherently cute, but you can modify it and make it cute. You can't modify feet and make it cute.
Tippy feet.
Well, how do you modify feet? Funky feet. That's not cute. We're still in episode one.
We're still in episode one.
So back at the Sisterhood of Karn, they're doing their chant, secret, full hearts, can't lose. They're like conjuring up an image of the TARDIS. And then they're like, we need that TARDIS. So they basically steal the TARDIS with their minds.
Yeah.
Like chanting in it. Like,
they make a smoke monster, like in Game of Thrones, but like less gross than when they did in Game of Thrones. I know you haven't, but your audience has. And that one was not for you. The audience knows what I'm talking about, and they remember when they watched it on Game of Thrones, and it was very viscerally uncomfortable.
Our audience is Vince and Ian McClain.
You guys have seen it. She pushed that ghost out of her vagina. That's what happened in Game of Thrones.
Maybe we should watch Game of Thrones.
No, you shouldn't.
So yeah, they conjure up the TARDIS. They go and stroke it a little bit. They know it's a time machine. They know it's a TARDIS. And then they're like, let's get to plotting and figure out how to stop the Doctor. So back the Doctor and Solon are chit-chatting. The Doctor knows who he is. He's read his book, which has a very long title. And, oh yeah, also Sarah Jane does not drink her wine. Very specifically just pours it out into a bowl.
Which, be fair, I would not drink bright green wine either. But actually, after I would. All that, I would try anything.
I would feel so socially awkward and anxious about the scene that just happened with, the scene that happened with Kondo, that I would, like, feel obligated to drink the wine because Kondo had to go to all that trouble of letting it breathe and stuff. So I'd be like, yeah, this is great. Yeah, I'm sorry, Kondo. So I'd be fucked. But Sarah Jane's smarter than me. But yeah,
the wind blows open a door. That's the next thing that happened.
Well, I was going to say also that, like, we find out that Solon is, like, fairly famous, like, surgeon, right?
Yes.
He's, like, well-known in...
in surgical circles.
Yeah, but then he went missing. And some people theorize that he went into the cult of Morbius.
And the name of the serial is The Brain of Morbius, so he probably did.
But yeah, then the wind comes in, knocks everything over, blows the sheet off the statue. And the Doctor somehow knows that this freak... which, like, Solon's just like, it's just a freak storm. Right. Like, this happens all the time. But the Doctor knows that it's the Sisterhood. It's a psychic... yeah. I don't know if he specifically says the Sisterhood, but he's like, it's a psychic...
yeah, he just said it's like a psychic visitor or something, or like...
but he also reckons, because the sheets come off of the statue again, he knows who that is. He knows it's a Time Lord. But then he passes out because he's been poisoned.
Sarah Jane just pretends to be poisoned because she's smart.
And then, like, immediately Solon, like, rushes over to the Doctor, like, stroking his head, like, it's so big. It was a big, plump, juicy melon. And then he orders Kondo to kill Sarah Jane. And then he goes to kill Sarah Jane. And then he's like, what are you doing? Take the Doctor to the lab. We don't have time to waste. The fuck's wrong with you, Kondo? Solon's an asshole.
He is.
He's a jerk to his help. But they take the Doctor away, and then Sarah Jane just bolts. Because she's been faking. They can't operate on the Doctor right away because the lights are out, and they need appropriate mood lighting. Because Solon is dramatic.
As fuck.
AF. So they go to go fix the lights, leaving the Doctor on a gurney. And then he magics away by the Sisterhood. The Sisterhood. It's the same effect.
Yeah, they smoke him out.
Whatever it was from Game of Thrones is also here.
Could also be the smoke monster from Lost.
Haven't seen Lost either.
Your audience has.
You don't know that. You're being awfully presumptive of our audience.
Hi, audience.
I guess you are technically the audience.
That's true.
Too, so.
I haven't seen Lost. But there's a smoke monster. I have seen Game of Thrones.
Is the smoke monster the polar bears?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. But she did push that ghost out of her vagina.
All right. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, you keep saying those words in that order like it has meaning, and I don't care for it.
Is this my vagina is haunted?
I don't think so.
Sarah Jane comes in to find the Doctor. She doesn't see the Doctor because he's disappeared. But she does see something moving underneath the sheet. And she pulls the sheet aside, and it is a fucked up, disgusting, headless chicken creature.
Like, it's so shiny.
It's so meaty and shiny.
Veiny?
Oh, yeah. Philip Hinchcliffe. What is his role?
He is the executive producer.
Okay, he's the executive producer. This serial got in a lot of trouble for being too much for children. There's a lot of trouble for the violence in this episode and this weird fucking creature. Even Philip Hinchcliffe was worried when they did this. Because he's like, you write it, you see it in the script, you don't think about it, and then they make it, and then it's like really gross. He was like, I was like, oh my god, it's shiny, and it's disgusting. And like, I mean, it's good and it works, but also, maybe this is too much. Even he himself was like, this is too much.
But it's not. It's great. It's wonderful. I'm glad it's in there.
I like it too.
I mean, like is a weird word choice. I hate it. But in a way that means that it's good.
It does have slightly diminishing returns when they put a hit on it, uh-huh. I think. But it's still effective.
Yeah, the first time you see it is terrifying, and like the last time you see it is goofy. Which is fine. It still totally works. But it's never as scary as the first time you see it.
Which I think works to the serial's advantage. I think that's kind of, again, that's kind of the tone of the serial. It's allowed to be scary and goofy at the same time. Like, be both tones.
And that is the cliffhanger for episode 1, is Sarah Jane finding this thing. That's the end of episode one. We're now into episode two, which I've called The Song of Death. So Sarah Jane immediately, like, she has like a, but then she's just like kind of okay with it. She's like, eh. And closes the curtain and like goes and like looks around and stuff.
It's like, oh, that was weird. Okay. Gotta stack up on stuff from my inventory now.
It's like she's playing some horror game and just like, I'm gonna fight this monster later.
Now I know not to do that.
Where's the med packs? But like Solon's coming in, so Sarah Jane ducks and hides. And then they're like, where the fuck's the doctor? Solon's like, it's gotta be the Sisterhood. And yes, it is the Sisterhood.
He was red.
So they've woken up the doctor and they're like asking him for confession. And this is the first instance of him being sort of condescending to him because he's like, oh, you use teleportation? You guys are still using that old outdated thing? Pshaw.
But also the doctor's kind of a dick.
That's true.
I really like, I love in general the way Robert Holmes writes the doctor. Because I feel like anytime Robert Holmes writes the doctor, he becomes a little bit more insufferable. But like...
But not in like a John Pertwee way?
No, in a way where the joke is clearly on him. In a way where like the doctor does things like pout and say, I'm not going to do anything today. But then also get all high and mighty. Like, I'm a Time Lord and I walk in infinity. That sort of nonsense.
Also the doctor has... They're basically threatening to kill him. And there's a line where the doctor's like, but I'm only 749. Life doesn't begin until 749. And then he sort of name drops Morbius and they're like, but Morbius is dead. And he's like, you're right, Morbius is dead, but I totally felt him. He touched me with his mind.
Yeah.
Gross.
And they're like, it couldn't have been Morbius because he was heavily atomized when they made sure this guy was dead. And he's like, no, he's not dead. I think he's still around. I think you guys are wrong.
I feel his presence here on this battle station.
Then they're like, he's dead, and you will be soon, also, as well. Meanwhile, there's a great sort of scene of, like, Solon and Kondo are sneaking around outside the Sisterhood, and they're, like, sneaking around outside, and Sarah Jane is sneaking around watching Solon and Kondo sneaking around. There's, like, layers of sneakery going on.
I like all the different kind of factions in this. There's like the Doctor and Sarah Jane, there's
Solon and Kondo,
and they have their own weird thing. Like, even within Solon and Kondo, that triad, there's Solon, Kondo, and eventually Morbius, and they all kind of hate each other. And there's also the Sisterhood on the other. Like, there's a lot going on, all these different kind of shifting alliances and stuff.
It doesn't feel like bloated and how do these things all connect. It's actually really, like, complicated and really fun.
And there's even, like, shifting alliances between, like, the Sisterhood doesn't like the Doctor, and then the Doctor's working with the Sisterhood. Solon wants to kill the Doctor, but then he's, like, helping out the Doctor at points. It's, like, this whole, everybody's using each other. Right now, though, the Sisterhood does not like the Doctor. They're basically going to burn him alive, witch style.
I like that they're, like, you need to confess so that we'll give you, like, a painkiller while we burn you. But, like, they care an awful lot that he confesses when they're just gonna kill him no matter what.
They're just blood hungry.
But they have to have the moral high ground.
The Doctor tries to be like, hey, you guys like the Time Lords, though. What up? And they're like, the Time Lords are just using us. And you're just using us and blah, blah, blah. Also, he gets filled in on the fact that the flame is dying. And that's when he's first like, it shouldn't be. It's science. And science never
dies.
Lies. Or dies. Science never dies or lies. He's also worried about them burning him because it could potentially blow up the whole place. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because the gas from the...
From
the flame. Secret flame.
Sacred fire, sacred flame.
I kept thinking they were saying secret, but they were saying sacred.
Yeah.
It's just the Sisterhood of the Secret Flame.
Secret flame? Sacred flame?
Sacred Heart?
Can't lose.
I know people who went to Sacred Heart. It's a high school in Missouri.
It sounds like a hospital.
Yeah, it does sound like a hospital. It sounds like a hospital that, like, ran for eight seasons on ABC and then, like, one season on... What's the deal around? I think it was on NBC for, like, 8 years and then ABC for, like, a year.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the Brotherhood of Healing. That was a joke just for Joe.
I got it. But yeah, we're talking about Seinfeld. Yeah. So they are dancing around the Doctor and singing the Song of Death. Solon rushes in to stop it because he knows it's the Song of Death and he really wants that head.
Such a good head, you guys.
Basically, he's like, listen, I've helped you guys out a lot. I've like done some medical work on, some of the Sisterhood before.
I made her eyes do that thing.
He's like, just don't kill the Doctor. And the Doctor's like, I agree, seconded. But they are like, no, we're not going to save the doctor. And he's like, he just straight up goes, I'll trade you Kondo for him. What a dick.
I think at this point, he also says, okay, kill him if you have to, but give me the head.
Yeah, that's what he says after they say no to Kondo.
He gives up Kondo first before he thinks of that.
While this whole one-sided bidding war is going on, Sarah Jane sneaks up, dressed up like one of the Sisterhood, and pulls wire cutters or something out of the doctor's pockets.
I thought she pulled up the sonic.
No, she cut. She had like little snips, snippy snips,
little tin snips,
and she cuts the doctor's restraints.
I like that she just knows like where the doc, like which pocket the doctor keeps those in. That's the level of relationship that they're at right now.
Yeah, definitely.
But finally, Solon leaves in a huff. I don't even know if they agree to give him the head.
I don't think they do. I also like that
he doesn't get a head.
He doesn't get a head. I also like that Sarah Jane is dressed up like one of the Sisterhood, as long as you don't look too closely. Like, when you first see her, it's like, oh, she stole one of their outfits, and then you look at her again, and it's clearly just one piece of cloth that she's wearing over herself.
It's the wrong color, too. Like, yeah. They're all red, and hers is, like, pink.
It's the bare minimum of a disguise. And no one notices.
But the Song of Death resumes.
They light the fire, and the doctor, like, stays there for a minute before running.
Fun fact, Tom Baker almost got caught on fire during that scene.
Really?
Yeah, there was like a problem, and like the woman who plays the older leader of the Sisterhood saw that it was going to be bad, and she was like, jump, and like Tom Baker jumped out of the way, and then it just went foof. And if she had not said that, Tom Baker would have been Krispy Kreme.
So wait, was that not supposed to happen that way?
I think they refilmed it, but like the initial take was bad.
And that's what it takes to make them refilm something in classic hope.
It's almost killing it, dude. That's a fun little Joe fact. Oh, we didn't get a live one.
All right, we'll put this in earlier.
Okay.
And we'll put it in now.
All right.
All right. Joe facts. All right, put that in now.
Okay.
Joe facts.
It's in now.
Cool.
So what then happened? Okay, so yeah, the fire goes up. Yeah, and it is. It's like right in his face. The older leader looks away for half a second, looks back, and he's gone. She looks around, sees him and Sarah Jane running out of the building, and she shoots Green Lantern ring style, but it's a blue beam out of her ring, and it like hits Sarah Jane as they're heading out. We don't know exactly what happened right away, but we will find out.
So at this point, Kondo is pissed, right?
Yeah, because he's like, you were going to offer me up.
And he's just going to kill him. He's done.
Solon's like, no, it was just a joke. It was a bad joke, but it was just a joke. I was just joking. Was, you know, we were just cutting up. And like, Kondo buys it? No, it doesn't. He says, Kondo is not a joke.
What happens is he says, okay, if you don't kill me, I'll give you your arm back. And that's all he wants, really.
An arms trade.
No. Your notes say arms trade. I'm funny. You wrote I'm funny into your note.
I sure did.
You really did.
Because I knew you were gonna say it wasn't, and you needed that reminder. But guess what? Sarah Jane is blind.
Yep.
This is a precursor to 12's arc.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just for this serial.
Sarah Jane takes it well-ish. She freaks out a little bit, but she's doing it in that way where she's like making jokes about it while being really sad.
Yeah.
Because she says she could like sell flowers, and then she uses that pink thing to like wrap it around.
Yeah, it's really adorable, but also sad.
The doctor's just like, shh, calm down. You'll be fine. I'll have been there. She also tells the doctor about the headless body she saw and how that's weird, right? And then we hear Solon talking to Morbius. We don't see Morbius yet. We just hear him, and he sounds an awful lot like a Dalek, because I guess they did not have many options available to them at the time to vocally change vocals. My notes make no sense here. It just says that they have a heated debate, and Solon reads off his resume. I guess he's just like talking about how great he is.
Yeah, I think Morbius thinks that Solon is getting too high and mighty and is kind of trying to like put him in his place. And then Solon's like, no, this can only happen because I am the best surgeon. I won a surgery. I won 3 surgeries and was nominated for 5.
I'm not the one who got himself dead. Just saying.
And you need me. So show some respect, Jarhead.
That was actually one of my titles for a little while, then I changed it. But yeah, Morbius just is like, yeah, you're right. I do really want a body. Because I ain't got no body. I ain't got no body. Nobody.
You know what's weird?
It's for me.
In the notes here, it doesn't say you're funny.
So Kondo comes in and interrupts. And it's like, you gotta come here because things are happening. And they go in and it's just the doctor and Sarah Jane sitting there. And the doctor is being all adorable. He smiles at him real big.
He's showing off his head.
He's teasing.
He's a real head tease.
But he has his scarf draped over his feet.
Yes.
And I think that's adorable.
Also, there's no way for that to have happened naturally. He had to be like, you know, it'd be great. As if my scarf was placed just so.
He's posing. But he asks Solon to examine Sarah Jane's eyes because they need a doctor. But isn't the doctor a doctor?
It's honorary.
While Solon is examining Sarah Jane's eyes, the doctor takes a peek and sees the creature. Doesn't say anything, though. Just like, oh, that's weird. And
like the doctor doesn't have three of those in the TARDIS somewhere.
So he's like, how's it going, Solon? And like, this legitimately terrified me for a second. Solon just looks up and shakes his head. Not even like a lot, just very subtly shakes his head no. Like, it's not good. But he's not saying it.
Dad's like, she'll recover soon.
And I think she'll be fine. Hey, Kondo, take Sarah Jane away, please. And she's like, what? No. The doctor's like, it's fine. Take her. And then he takes her out. And then he basically just straight up says, yeah, it's permanent. You can't fix it. There is maybe one way, though. Give me that elixir, the elixir of life from the Sisterhood, and that could fix her. That could take care of it.
I like the doctor's reaction to this, which is like, all right, I'm gone. I'm already doing it.
Which Solon has a plan. Though his plan, he sends the doctor away, and then he writes a letter, a whole letter, calls Kondo, gives Kondo the letter, and says, go take this to the Sisterhood, but you have to be there before the doctor is. The doctor left, like, hours ago. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the Sisterhood.
Not hours ago.
Long enough to write a letter.
And like, I feel like it doesn't seem like the Sisterhood is that far away.
Everything seems to be happening within 20 yards of each other.
So I'm a little confused about the logic here.
He does get there first.
Yeah, Kondo does get there first.
He's just fast.
Was he fast, or did the doctor just like get overconfident and nap several times?
I know you're making a reference, but that also is so in character.
But also, Sarah Jane was left in the, like, or the dining room area by Kondo, but, like, sort of sneaks off when she hears a voice, and she's following the voice because she's blind, so she has to follow sounds. And she basically goes to where Morbius is. It's Morbius that she hears. And then we finally see Morbius for the first time, other than his stone head from earlier, and he is a brain in a glowing jar. Like, it's full of, like, green, yeah. Glowing green liquid.
It's a full-on brain in a jar, classical style.
And he's terrified, too. Yeah. Like, this isn't like a reveal of the villain and the villain is scary. This is the reveal of the villain and he's like, please don't hurt me, I'm just a brain in a jar. And he's like, he thinks that she's been sent from the Sisterhood to kill him. And that is the cliffhanger, is a brain in a jar pleading for his life. Doctor Who, everybody. See you in episode 2. We're now into episode 3, which I have two titles for. The Immortality Trap, or Where's Your Head At?
Oh.
Yeah.
I like that song, Basement Jacks. Anyway, what happens?
Yeah, what happens?
It's a good question.
I think Solon gets her out.
Morbius is great because he's so shouty, but he's just a brain.
No, finish it. Finish the note.
That brain is chewing the scenery so much.
There you go. He's reading my notes. That's why it's funny.
But Solon gets her out of the room before she can do anything.
Before she can not see that it's a brain.
Then he like pushes her out of the room and immediately is like, hey, Morbius, what the fuck? And then she's like, Morbius? So like, he does the only thing that could tip Sarah Jane off, and that is verbally name dropping. So he fucked up, really.
Exactly.
He had to go and make it audio.
Speaking of audio, this is my favorite detail about Morbius's brain in the jar, is that they thought about it and they were like, he's a brain in a jar, how does he talk? The thing that they landed on was he's got vocal cords stretched out on some like
spider web thing.
Yeah, like it's not like a spider web, like it looks like it's vocal cords.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the fungus from the Super Mario Brothers movie?
Yeah, a little bit. It also kind of looks like, what's her name from New Who?
Was it Cassandra?
Yeah, Cassandra.
You're leaving out the part where the brain lights up.
The brain lights up.
As it talks.
As it talks. I don't know. To me, that's less horrifying than vocal cords stretched out across two poles and they vibrate.
I think that's amazing, though. That is so interesting and unique. But here's the thing. The doctor's like, I felt Morbius. He, like, reached out to me with his mind. So why couldn't that just be the voice?
Because the doctor's a Time Lord.
Okay, so Time Lords can only reach out to other Time Lords?
Yeah, presumably.
But yeah, I really like the vocal cords thing. I think it's an interesting
thing. They didn't have to do that. Like, they could have just put, like, a speaker in there. And everyone would have accepted it.
But no, it's got to be a body horror thing.
Exactly. It's very clever and gross.
But yeah, he just basically reestablishes, hey, I want a body. I don't care what it looks like, which is good. But Sarah Jane is still listening in because no one's bothered to make sure that she's, like, gone away.
Yeah.
And then Solon just keeps blabbing. And
Morbius talks about how he doesn't want to be a vegetable or a sponge, even though sponges aren't vegetables.
I wouldn't mind being a sponge.
I have in my notes here, does Morbius know about SpongeBob?
Being a sponge could be cool.
Yeah, he can be SpongeBob.
Maybe that's what happened to Morbius later. They dug his body up and he turned him into a sponge.
He does show up in the Eighth Doctor audio adventures.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
As a sponge?
As a sponge.
Sponge Morbius. He keeps talking, Sarah Jane's listening in, and she finds out that the doctor has been sent into a trap. I don't understand why there's a lock on the outside of the brain room. It would make sense for there to be a lock on the inside of the brain room.
There's not. There's just a lock on the outside.
Joe, what if the brain tried to escape?
That would be weird. Yeah, but there's a lock on the outside of the brain room. Sarah Jane locks Solon in with the brain and leaves. Meanwhile, the sisterhood are having themselves a little bit of a party. They are drinking. They're all drinking the elixir. And basically, they've pretty much run out.
Well, now everybody doesn't know that they're about to run out.
Right, yeah, because she's been keeping it a secret.
So they're all just having a good time.
Yeah, the only ones who know is the old leader and Bug Eyes. Do they have names?
They do. I think Bug Eyes is named Ocila or Ocula or something. Because I remember when I first watched it, I thought maybe the idea was that Bug Eyes was the same sister that was the one from the new series.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. They just have similar names.
It would make sense if they were the same.
Exactly. It would. And it seems like the sort of thing that they would do, but, you know.
They could probably even get the same actress. Because she's still alive, I think. Oh, that was, like, that was a really funny story on the DVD, too. Because they were, like, doing the DVD making of and stuff. And they interviewed the woman who plays the old woman, which she wasn't old when she filmed this. Like, it was just old person makeup.
Yeah.
On the commentary they're talking about, like, they all came in to do the interviews for the making of, and Philip Hinchcliffe was like, oh, you don't look like you've aged a day. And she's like, I was aged up in that, motherfucker. Now I'm just really old.
Rude. It's really obvious, too. She doesn't look, like, older. She looks like a mummy or something. Really, like, does. They're not, like, attempting to do anything realistic with it. She looks like a different species than everyone else.
She looks like a Muppet. They've all drank from the elixir, but Bug Eyes says, I noticed you didn't drink any. And she's like, because there isn't any. And, oh, well, I'm going to die. Deal with it. And then she gets Solon's letter, basically saying that, I guess the doctor's come there to take the elixir. Steal the elixir, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to steal it. He's going to ask for it nicely.
And then Sarah Jane almost walks off a cliff.
She's blind.
And that's almost foreshadowing because someone will fall off that cliff later. And then the doctor comes into the sisterhood. Another improv. He says ding dong. And then is caught in a tiny net. And the sisterhood surround him. And he's like, we've got to stop meeting like this.
Yeah. And then he like takes... he eventually just takes the net off. He did like really casually just like, all right, I'm going to take this off now.
I think it's hilarious too. Like there's a whole scene between when that happens. And it cuts back. And he's still just wearing the net, like having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like they've clearly moved him somewhere else too. Like, I don't know if the net really did anything.
No.
I think the sisterhood were counting on the doctor just being dramatic enough to leave it on. If we throw this net on the doctor, he'll keep it on. He'll be like, oh no, this net. Because that's just how he is.
He's so dramatic. Him and Solon. They're like drama buddies.
But the sisters basically say, who told you that she wasn't going to get better? Like, she's definitely going to get better.
Solon lied to you. They basically tell him that, like, yeah, Solon was kind of hooked up with Morbius. There was the trial of Morbius. Solon was definitely there. Morbius told the universe, pretty much, about the elixir. about the Sisterhood's secrets, and that has caused them to be constantly on guard from people trying to steal it. The doctor's like, well, listen, I'll help you, but you gotta stop wrecking ships. That's another one of those great comedy moments where he's just like, he offers that as a suggestion. He's like, right, guys? Huh? And it like pans over to all of them just staring at him. And then Sarah Jane is walking along blindly, bumps into a hook hand.
Oh no, who could that belong to?
Buster.
Buster Bluth. No, it's Kondo. He grabs her by the hair and then tells her she's pretty and that he likes her. And it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it's real weird.
She says maybe she could like him if he'd stop pulling her hair so much.
It's like third grade.
No, it's not.
Tony's saying no to that right now.
See, I just punched people who pulled my hair, and that's why I didn't have friends.
But you had hair.
Also, you don't want those people as friends.
No, you don't want those people as friends. They pull your hair.
But he picks up Sarah Jane and takes her away. Then the doctor continues to say that the flame is science. Science is science. It's so much science. And they're like, stop saying it's science. It's not science. And then that's when the doctor drops his whole thing about you guys don't change. I change all the time, and that makes me a better person than you.
Isn't a terrible message. He just doesn't have to be so arrogant about it.
Then he fiddles with the flame, and then it goes out. And everyone's like, what the fuck, motherfucker? And they chain him back up, and they're going to burn him again. But then, poof.
It comes back, and it's even bigger.
He basically turned it off and back on again.
Well, he cleared out the soot.
Yeah, he cleared out the soot. And then he goes and like warms his hands by it. Okay, so I'm not, like, super into the whole Kondo, like, girl pretty thing, but I do like this scene, which happens. It's they have Sarah Jane tied up on a table. Kondo's doing his big, like...
Which, by the way, Kondo was like, hey, I'm gonna, like, kill you if you don't give me back my arm. And then Solon's like, okay, hang on, like, I need to get all this stuff together to get your arm. And he's like, okay. And then, like, in the meantime, just goes back to doing what he's told to do.
Kondo's not very bright. They've got Sarah Jane tied up, and he's going back to his, like, girl pretty thing. And then, like, Sarah Jane just like, eh. And then Solon's just like, all right, that's enough. She doesn't like it. Go away. I just love the way he delivers that line. It's so hilarious.
Like, even the villain is like, she's not into it, man. Come on.
So he goes away. And he's like, well, Kondo's a nice enough guy. I might give him some of your hair. Weird. Creepy.
Ew.
Gross. But he's like, it's getting late. Where's my head? They should have brought me my head already. And he goes to talk to Morbius a little bit to kill some time. He said a pun that I missed at the time, but I've since found it. And I still don't remember the full context. But he says, Solon's talking to Morbius. And he says...
He's talking about like putting...
Oh, putting your head. Yeah, Time
putting
Lord head.
Yeah, and the Time Lord body and putting the whole Time Lord brain to the Time Lord head and putting it all together.
And he says it'd be the... And I think it's because, like, Morbius doesn't like the Time Lords, but they're using a Time Lord head to do it. And he's like, it'll be the crowning irony.
Yeah, he says, sorry, the pun was irresistible.
Yes, which was improv'd.
Yeah, which is funny, too. That, like, feels very modern to me. A lot of times the serial also definitely, just the writing feels very new. Because that's a very self-aware line. It's very...
Yeah.
Sorry, the pun was irresistible. Like, that's... Yeah. It's almost weird seeing that in something from the 70s.
It was really good.
Oh, but very good.
That actor, again, I can't say it enough. He's amazing. Even lines that aren't funny, he somehow makes funny just by his delivery.
Yeah.
It's great. I love him. So, Morbius is just like, the Sisterhood's teamed up with the Doctor and the Time Lords. It's, you just put me in a body already. Just do it. Use Sarah Jane's head if you have to. Which they're like, no, that's too small.
It's too small. It's a girl's head.
They finally decide that they're just going to use a brain case, which is just a big circular, like, aquarium.
They have a really great conversation where, like, Morbius is like, didn't you talk about making a brain case? And Soren's like, yeah, but it didn't work. And he's like, but you have the brain case. And Soren's like, yes! And he's so annoyed. He's like, yes, I have a brain case. Fine. Jesus.
It's not good. It's not going to work, but I guess I'll do it.
Yeah.
So he drains the brain, does a brain drain. He just pulls like a tube out of it and just starts gushing out the green glowing liquid. And then I guess the Sisterhood is going to like go through with like pretending that they've taken out the Doctor. Like, I'm not sure if you know whether or not, because they're carrying him out on a stretcher.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't remember if we know at the point that the Doctor's playing along or if we're supposed to be like, oh no, they've betrayed the Doctor or whatever. Well, not betrayed, but like, just they're not on board with the Doctor.
They just decided to give him back anyway.
They've moved the brain to the lab, and they're going to put it on the body. And this is at the point where Kondo notices that the creature has a very familiar looking arm.
Oh, Kondo.
It has Kondo's arm. And then another very violent thing happens, because he's like, fuck you, Zolan, and like, starts to attack him. And like, Zolan just pulls a gun and immediately just shoots him. And we get, like, blood splatter, too. It's just, like, his chest goes blah.
It shocked me so much. I was not prepared to see that.
That doesn't kill him. They keep fighting. They knock over the brain jar. And the brain falls onto the floor in a goopy mess.
Yeah.
Zolan loses it. Shoots Kondo, like, 3 more times.
Yeah.
In quick succession. And that still doesn't fucking kill Kondo.
Yeah, no, he's full on Rasputin in this.
The rest of the series, he's like dragging himself along hallways, yeah, like on his hands and knees, like, ah! It's at this point in the serial when Kondo gets shot, the episode just gets like super fucked up and dark. Yeah. Solon's very angry, sort of like dusting off the brain, like, 5 second rule. He's like, maybe it'll be fine. He's worried about brain damage, but he's like, what else can I do? So he puts it in the case and like forces Sarah Jane to help him too.
Yeah.
That's also fucked up. Like, he's like, you gotta pump this pump every 3 seconds. If you don't, I'll kill you. And like, she's blind and crying.
Yeah.
This is that none of this is played for laughs. It's, I mean, maybe the brain falling onto the floor a little bit, but like, it's still just like intense and like, you're like, shit, this is terrible. This is terrifying.
Yeah, Solon and Liz Slayton are not playing it for comedy at all. Like, they're 100% playing it straight, and it's very fucked up.
I was so like anxious and nervous during this scene. So she starts pumping the body, but the macro hand on it.
Yeah, it does have a macro hand. Or at the very least, a crab hand. It could just be a very big crab.
Let's just say it's a macro.
It's a macro.
Why not?
But there's no such thing as macro.
The macro do not exist. And Ben is glory. But yeah, it starts, he's fiddling around with it, and it starts clapping its hand. He's like, Eureka, it works. It's alive.
I saw a thing somewhere that they might be animating the macro terror.
Ooh.
And I would be so happy, because I want at least an animation of Jamie's dance.
Yes. Was it the cheerleader scene?
The cheerleader scene, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I hope that happens. I feel like there's probably other ones that would get animated before that one, but I want it.
I want it so bad. I hope that it's true.
I have a dumb joke in my notes. Just Sisterhood of the Traveling Doctor. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Uh-huh. We all have one. We all did it. Tony said one earlier. I've got one in my notes. I just didn't say it.
What was it?
I think it might have been Traveling Karn. There's no good one. That's the thing. There's not actually a good one.
Well, they are carrying the doctor, so that's why it's like Sisterhood of the Traveling Doctor.
Yeah, but it's not funny.
No.
No. The audience knows what I'm talking about.
But Zolan goes to see what's up with the doctor, finds the doctor is being brought in, and he leaves Sarah Jane alone, and her sight starts to come back. She's like, I can start to see. And as she... her eyes are getting better. Morbius's new body is rising behind her and like slowly coming for her. And that's the cliffhanger. That's the end of episode 3. We are now into episode 4, the last episode. The Body of Morbius, or Body by Zolan.
We're episode 4.
Sarah Jane's eyesight fully comes back. She's like, I can see! And turns around and goes, ah! Because she sees this terrible, horrible, no good, very bad Morbius. When they start to fight a bit, like they're running around the gurneys and stuff, and then they start a fire somehow. They knock something over and it starts a fire. Morbius gets his hand caught on fire, which makes him very unhappy.
That's fair.
Distracts him enough that Sarah Jane gets out of the room, and he just takes it out on his burning hand out on things in the room. Because he's not talking at this point, right? He's just making,
yeah, little bird squawks.
Like, constantly. I'm a monster! Sarah Jane rushes out, sees Zolan looking at the doctor's body, and is like, hey, your thing went bad. You should probably go check on it. So he does, and then she goes over to the doctor, thinking he's dead, and then he's not, because they do that. That's like their thing.
And they acknowledge it, too.
They do.
This episode, again, I think another reason that this feels like New Who to me is that it's very meta.
Mm-hmm.
In general. Like, that joke is meta.
And they're very, very much hitting the, like, Frankenstein tropes.
Yeah.
And not, like, hiding that at all.
No.
They're almost basically going, hey, guys, this is Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So that seems meta, too.
Yeah, but yeah, the doctor wakes up and Sarah's like, I thought you were dead. And it's like, yeah, you keep doing that.
So Morbius does literally have the, I'm a monster! scene because he like tears up the sheet bed he used to live in, sees himself in the mirror, and just smashes the mirror because he ugly now.
This thing is pitched like Phantom of the Opera sometimes.
Then Solon comes in trying to calm him down, and Morbius just gives him a big old hug, like, Daddy, right? Uh-huh. And then they make up, and that's the end of the serial. It's a happy ending.
No.
No, he squeezes him, and then he passes out. I thought he killed him.
I thought he killed him, too.
But he does not.
No.
Much like Kondo, he keeps on ticking. And so Morbius rushes out, and the Doctor and Sarah Jane are like, ah. But the Doctor, like, his plan of attack is much like John Pertwee when he first met a Silurian, but she just goes up and goes, hello, Morbius, and holds his hand out to shake his hand, and then Morbius bonks him on the head, and he goes down. And then Morbius goes after Sarah Jane, and Kondo, still not dead.
And still harboring a crush.
Pushes Sarah Jane down some stairs. That's what you do.
Yeah.
With your crush. I mean, he's pushing her out of the way of Morbius, but she does fall down some stairs.
Yeah. Like a lot of stairs.
I warned you about the stairs, bro. But then Morbius finally, definitively kills Kondo.
Yeah. Right? After, like, I think so. After, like, a little fight, it's weird because it looks like a kaiju fight, but, but like, small size. It's like a mini kaiju fight. One's got the crab hand, and and Kondo's got the claw hand. And
the hook hand?
Yeah. The hook hand, yeah.
Morbius perfects his, like, finishing move, which is he puts his claw hand around Kondo's neck, and I don't know.
You got clawed, that's what he says.
You got clawed.
Is your name Clawed? Because you're about to get clawed. Clawed. I hope you're clawed. That's what he says.
Verbatim. It's in the script.
Exactly.
I wonder if that was a Terrence Dix line or a Robert Holmes line.
It sounds like Robert Holmes.
Tony is so tired. I was trying to make a Claude Rains joke, but I couldn't think of one.
No, there isn't one. It's like Sisterhood of the Traveling Whatever.
We'll get to the end of this podcast, and Tony will just slam dunk a Sisterhood of the Traveling Whatever joke.
Yeah.
And it will kill, and we will be so upset.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm putting a lot of pressure on you.
Thanks.
So he kills Kondo and goes out into the stormy weather. Solon is not dead, but has had time to change clothes and get a needle. The Doctor also gets Sarah Jane and out of the whatever at the bottom of the stairs and sets her up somewhere so she's fine. But Solon puts his needle inside of a caulk gun or something.
It's a needle gun.
And points it at the Doctor but asks for his help. He's like, this is like a...
like a sedative or something. It's like...
yeah, like a tranquilizer.
Yeah.
And they're going to go Morbius hunting.
Because basically, like, it's not done yet. It's just all of his animal instincts. And not any of his higher functions.
Higher functions haven't been hooked up yet. Because it's a Frankenstein thing, so at some point the monster has to escape and they have to go find.
This is the point where, like, the Doctor and Solon are like, they have to team up. Morbius is heading over to the Sisterhood. He kills one of the sisters. He slowly picks her up and then puts his hand over her. It's, like, kind of clumsily choreographed. Like, she's not struggling at all, really. And he's just like, hey, hold on. I guess, come here, okay. Come here. And clamp.
You got Claude.
Sister Claude was my favorite. But the Doctor and Solon catch up. Morbius starts fighting the Doctor, puts him in the head clamp, but Solon shoots him. Not the Doctor, the Morbius. So the Doctor's like, you're going to take this brain out of this thing, and I'm going to go take the brain to the Time Lords. And Solon's like, yeah, that's what's going to happen. You can trust me.
And the Doctor does for some reason.
He really does. They put the body on the thing. He's like, I'm going to take out that brain, no funny business, and leaves the room. I mean, sure, it's to check on Sarah Jane, but he leaves him alone.
He's like, I said no funny business.
Surely he will not engage in funny business after I have specifically specified no funny business.
This is serious business.
He locks them into the room. There's just locks on all of the rooms.
It's the same room. He locks them in that room from the outside.
Yeah, it's outside locker room.
I don't understand why there's locks on that side of the door. It makes no sense. You'd want to keep the brain a secret from people, not...
people's secret from the brain.
Yes. But there is a bit where, like, the Doctor checks in on Sarah Jane, and she's like, oh, I've had the strangest dream. And then recaps the whole thing for the audience. I was blind, and then I could see... then the Doctor joins in on the chorus, and he starts saying it along with her, and she's like, oh, it's not a dream. It's for realsies. And then that's when they get locked in. And then she's like, sonic screwdriver. And he's like, I left it in the TARDIS. And the TARDIS is at the Sisterhood.
That's another really meta joke. And just the way she says it, too. Sonic screwdriver.
And then she's like, ah. when he says that they can't use it. They're going to have to come up with a different plan, which involves...
making cyanide?
I think so. Some sort of smoky substance.
As best as I can tell, and I'm not super clear on it, the idea is that they'll make, like, poisonous gas and put it up the vent to where Solon is. And mm-hmm. he'll be like, hey, poisonous gas, I better go downstairs and see, make, turn that off.
Which isn't what happens.
What happens is the thing that you would think would happen, which is they pump poisonous gas into the room and Solon passes out.
Presumably dies? This is the last we see of him.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think that's, yeah. I think they kill Solon.
Oops.
Good job.
They killed him.
Yeah, they're like, it'll either work or we'll...
or we'll die here locked in this room. And then he dies and you're like, oh shit.
And she's like, how long will we have to know? And then I think he says something about months.
Like a month? Yeah.
Yeah, like a month. And she's like, how many days?
How many hours
in a month? Yeah. How many seconds are in a month?
She's very snarky in this serial.
And then when she says how many seconds in a month, the doctor like just rambles off like the number. And then they hear it, rah! And they're like, oh, short month. Because Morbius has woken up. Because Solon was working on him. Now he's better. He's like, he can talk and stuff now. But he still looks like a monster. He still looks the same.
Yeah. This serial is structured a lot like Pyramids of Mars, actually. Where you kind of have the secondary boss, the servant of the big, scary, evil guy who's your main bad guy for like 3 episodes. And the last episode, we sort of switch over to the big, scary, cosmic bad guy.
But we get the big, scary bad guy and they immediately just like roast him. They just start coming up with new names for it. Cause they're like, you're not really Morbius. They're too different to be Morbius. You should have a different name. And they just start, like, improving new names. Like, I think they call him Chop Suey, Galactic yeah. Emperor. And this makes him very mad. And then they're like, don't get too mad, your brain might overheat. And he's like, my brain is fine, thank you. And they're like, well, you want to put it to a test? He's like, sure, we've got this Time Lord thing conveniently here.
Yeah, no, they just happen to have some sort of, like, Time Lord brain battle machine.
I heard the reasoning behind this was, like, he's like, in the, like, the climactic fight or whatever... you want, like, a big, epic, like, fight. But, like, we're filming these in sets, and you don't really have room to do, like, choreography like that and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, they would frequently try to think of ways around that. So, that's why there's a mind fight. Because that has, like, a big fight, but you don't have to do anything.
Yeah. And it's very frequently anticlimactic.
But this one has a neat little twist to it that drives me crazy.
I knew it would. I remember thinking, oh, this is going to drive Joe crazy.
And basically, they hook up their minds to this thing, and they're going to fight each other to the death, I believe. It's like, it's possible to do it to the death.
Yeah. Oh, it's possible to do it to the death.
So they're mind wrestling, and we see there's a visual thing that shows you what they're thinking for some reason. I don't know why there needs to be a visual component. I guess this was like a spectator sport back on Gallifrey.
Wait, is it implied that like Sarah Jane can see it? Or is it just for us, the audience?
I mean, it's physically on the device.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah.
So the first thing we see is Morbius's fucked up monster body. And then that fades to Morbius back in his prime. Because it's basically the human version of that statue. Exactly. So that's why I say when we do see.
Back in his like prime when he was the most sexy.
Very Roman.
And then it changes to Four's face. Four fades into John Pertwee.
Yeah.
John Pertwee fades into Patrick Troughton. Patrick Troughton fades into William Hartnell.
Yeah.
And then what the fuck?
And then we see a bunch of other faces.
Yes, we see Philip Hinchcliffe. We see Robert Holmes. We see the director of this episode, a director of a previous episode, and 2 other people who I've forgotten. But what the fuck?
The implication is that one is not one.
Because even like Morbius says, how many lives have you led?
Which feels very like Robert Holmes. Because again, Robert Holmes is very into Time Lord mythology. At this point, he's the head writer and he's written for the show for a long time. So I think he feels like he's very interested in Time Lords and stuff. And so I think he likes trying to answer these sorts of sorts of questions.
So here's my question, though. I know why it bothers Joe. And everything that we've seen, it's been pretty firmly established that one is one.
And that's the way it will be from this point out.
Yeah, but this isn't challenging anything that's already been established. So why didn't this stick?
Because no one liked it. Because William Hartnell was the first Doctor, it feels weird that he's not the first Doctor, right? Remember how annoyed everyone was when they introduced the War Doctor?
That's true.
That is true.
There were so many arguments about, like, the numbering getting fucked up. It's so much simpler if the first Doctor was the first Doctor.
And it's not the only time that a Doctor has just been sort of like, no, that didn't happen. Because, Valyard?
Yeah, it could be Valyard. And also, everything's sort of implied here. There's nothing directly stated. At no point does anyone say, hey, those are your older faces.
Right. It's just heavily implied. And Philip Hinchcliffe has straight up said, no, yeah, that's what it is. I don't care what is said afterwards. That's what it is.
Yeah. There's lots of ways you can get around it. You could say that those are future faces. You could also say that those are faces from alternate timelines.
You could say that they're previous regenerations of Morbius.
Yeah, I don't like that, though. That makes the least sense.
I've heard that they're just younger versions of Hartnell.
That's also... Hartnell went through a lot of hairstyles.
Yeah.
I mean, like, only one of those makes sense.
I don't know. I like alternate timelines. That's the one that's the most useful. But yeah.
It is a little frustrating, though.
It's frustrating. And I get why, at the time, they probably thought, this is really cool.
Fun fact about it, the reason why it's all the cat, like, crew members, it's the writers and the directors and producers and stuff like that, is they're like, we don't want to pay actors because that would be expensive, so we're just going to just take pictures of the crew. And, like, the crew was all down for it, and then they're like, yes, we need to save money. But then the, like, actors union or whatever got mad at them, and, like, they got sued, and they had to pay money to, like, an actors guild thing because they didn't pay them an actor's rate. So they wound up having to pay anyway. So they got in trouble for not using actors. I think that's what it was, is they were trying to bypass hiring actors, and, like, they should have hired actors.
The thing that this makes me think of is in Supernatural, there's this character Castiel, and he's, like, the first angel introduced in the show. And he plays it very odd. He's very much playing a creature who doesn't quite understand what being human is like. And every other character, like every other angel who's been introduced since then, is not like that.
That happens a lot on genre shows, like where you have someone who is the first person. And then lots of times it gets sort of retconned as that guy is just weird. That happened with Anya, too.
Yeah, it did. But it makes me think of it as like, you know, he thought he was kind of establishing this thing and everybody was like, no.
It's always especially interesting when the actor who plays the character develops a specific vocal tic that no other actor can do. I'm blanking on specific examples, but this is a thing that also drives me crazy.
Like, you think it's their accent, but it's just that one guy. They shoot brains at each other and Morbius is like, ah! His helmet thing sparks and he wanders off and the Doctor passes out. My note says, who the fuck? Instead of what the fuck, it says, who the fuck?
Who?
The who fuck. The fuck? Yes, he's the Doctor, but Doctor who the fuck? While all this has been happening, the Sisterhood have been talking and discussing things. They've been discussing who's going to be the leader, and Bug Eye says, hey, I'll be the leader, and she has to convince the old leader that the Doctor's good and they need to go help him, and eventually they're like, yeah, fine, whatever. So the Sisterhood arrives, and they just sort of, like, chant at Morbius a little bit, and he's like, ah, stop, you're loud and annoying, and then they chase him around and he falls off a cliff.
And this is also, like, very Frankenstein. This is the mob killing the monster.
Except, aren't you supposed to be a little bit sad in Frankenstein? And this one you're like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect one to run. They do have torches. They don't have pitchforks, but they have torches.
They do have torches. He falls off the cliff, hits the camera, it jiggles, and then there's a nice CSO of him twirling down into the ravine. So, but the Sisterhood takes the Doctor. They're basically like, he needs the elixir. And then we have just enough for the Doctor. Because the fire's come back and it's been making elixir, but there's not a lot yet. But there's just enough to, like, fix the Doctor from this brain test.
The old sister has not drank yet.
Yeah, and she was supposed to because she's going to die soon, I guess. And she's like, I don't need it. Gives it to the Doctor. The Doctor drinks it, wakes up. and points at the flames, and the old lady leader is inside. I don't entirely understand this. Why is she inside the fire?
She sacrifices herself?
She's dying, but in a metaphorical way and not a sad there's a body still way.
That thing is not big enough to hold her body, but she, like, she's in the fire, and then she turns into a younger version of herself. And then disappears. And then in our life, everybody's like, she sacrificed herself.
Yeah, it's not super clear.
Yeah, it's very weird.
It's cool, though. I like it.
So now a different person can be the leader, and there can be progress and change.
And everyone can do bug eyes and spirit fingers.
Yeah, she hooks her thumbs.
Yeah, we never really talked about that. But, like, one of the sisterhood's things is they stick their fingers, their hands splayed out right up under their head.
Like, they're doing... Like, they're kind of doing, like, a W, but, like,
yeah.
their palms facing themselves.
Exactly. They also kind of remind me of those, speaking of Romans, from the fires of Pompeii.
Yeah.
That sisterhood, too.
The one that had a pre-Amy.
Yeah, they had, yeah.
But he basically gives them whatever the 70s equivalent of a lighter is.
I think it's a firecracker is what he was using to fix the flame.
And he gives them that. And she can't read the English writing on it. And then he reads it off because it's just like modern day directions, basically. Yeah. And then the TARDIS explodes and disappears.
Yeah.
Which I think that was just the Doctor being dramatic. He's like, the TARDIS has a fireworks setting.
Yeah.
And he goes... And then they disappear. The wrap-up for this is supremely quick. It's, like, super quick. It's like, we're done. Let's go. That's it.
Reminds me of Macro Terror, where they just dance on out there. Another thing that I hope gets animated.
But that's it. That's the end of The Brain of Morbius. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for final thoughts.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special commercial for We Podcast and We Know Things.
Wow, a commercial?
Yes, Sam, a commercial. You do this to me every time. Anyway, we are We Podcast and We Know Things, the single source for all of your nerdy news in gaming, TV, film, music, and all things pop culture. Heck, even wrestling. We're basically spreading the good word of nerd one episode at a time.
Check us out here on the ESO Podcast Network and wherever fine podcasts are, including the iOS Podcast app, CastBox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the goings-on in the nerdy world. Now back to your ESO Network podcast.
Who's better than us?
And we're back. Chris, do you know what time it is?
Yeah, hold on. It's 9:25.
I thought you were going to be your own co-host.
9:25.
Okay, but in addition to that, what time is it? What is the thing we do at this point in the podcast?
We see what time it is.
What do we eventually wind up doing after this dumb bit of business?
Well, we really drag it out. Because we drag it out for a long time. Normally, this is the sort of thing that Tony gets tired of. But when she does it, it's fine.
Called out.
I'm wondering how she feels about it right now, considering she's not the one doing it.
I feel kind of proud.
You know, she's loving it.
It's time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts!
Tony, you're the guest. You get to go first.
My final thoughts are that this is a really good serial, and I like it a lot. And it's goofy and weird and scary in all the right amounts of those things. And that's it. It's really good.
Very short final thoughts.
I'm so tired.
Yeah, I really liked it. I think this may be one of the best. It's definitely the best Fourth Doctor serial I've seen so far. It's so solid. The writing is great. It's really funny. It's really scary. I can't think of really much that I thought was poor or bad. I don't even think there is anything. I mean, I'm a little annoyed at the multi-doctor thing because, like, I want it to make sense. But all in all, it's just so well done. And well cast. The set design is amazing. The creature design is gross and terrifying. The sisterhood is great. Like, their design is really good. And their set is really good. Everything is just good. I liked it a lot. I feel like this season has been one of the best seasons of Doctor Who so far. Those are my final thoughts.
I think this serial is like Honey Nut Cheerios. Really good serial. I said this earlier, I love this serial a lot. It's one of my favorites that they've ever done for reasons that I've already talked about. It's the tone of it is so, like, specific. It's so creepy and goofy at the same time. And it's the thing that, like, I want Doctor Who to be the most. Like this, yeah, it's my platonic ideal for a Doctor Who serial. Just really creepy, really goofy, and really weird. And like for a Frankenstein riff, it's so much weirder than it needs to be. You know, like, yeah, they're doing Frankenstein, but also they don't need to have like this weird sisterhood and all this kind of Time Lord mythology and all of this extra stuff. And like the brain that falls on the floor. And like we talked about the plotting and just all these different alliances and the way, yeah, it's complex, but never like feels bloated. It moves along. It's really, really well paced. The last episode's a little messy. Like, I don't think it's quite the neatest plotted serial ever. Like sometimes it's sort of messy, but like it zips along. It's really funny. It's really weird. Like everyone's at the top of their game. Like, yeah, the guy playing Solon is so good at being the bad guy. Tom Baker's so great. Like, Elizabeth Slayton is peak Sarah Jane here. Peak adorable. And just everything is, like, fucking great in the serial. And I agree. Like, I think this season is one of the best seasons that Doctor Who ever had. There's, like, this season. There's 3's first season. There's Series 5 and Series 9. Like, they're, like, you know, just really solid all the way through. This is everything about it's great. It's pretty good.
So, Tony, anything you want to plug?
Actually, yeah. So, at work, I've been working on this show called The Unseen World. And basically, the plan with it is that we will go to different sort of roadside attractions or various other interesting locations and tell the story of them. It should premiere either on Heartland or on Retro in September. You might have an affiliate for that network, you might not. But you should go and like the Facebook page, follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. It's See Unseen World on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook.
When you say that, is it C, the letter C, or S-E-E?
S-E-E. S-E-E, Unseen.
Will there be a way to watch it online?
I don't know yet. It depends on which network it's going to be on. There's a chance it'll end up on the Roku or streaming on Heartland's website. It all depends on what network it ends up on. And if you follow the Facebook or the Twitter, all that information will be available as soon as I have it. So you should check that out.
What are some of the places you've been to?
We went to Howard Finster's Paradise Garden. That's the pilot episode. And if you don't know who that is, you should check it out. It's in Somerville, Georgia, and Howard Finster is basically this preacher who also, like, made all this really amazing folk art. Like, thousands and thousands of paintings. Maybe just thousands, but it's a lot. Like, he decided he was just going to start painting one day and then never stopped. And he also has all these cement works that are all around. He's got, like, It's a couple acres of land, and there's all these cement works and different things that he built out of just, like, random junk that he put together into different art pieces. And that was basically his way of preaching to people. He also did a couple album covers, one for R.E.M., and I can't remember who the other one was, Talking Heads?
R.E.M. also filmed one of their music videos in the garden, the Radio Free Europe, I believe.
And so we went out to the garden. We interviewed a couple people who knew Howard.
Space Ghost?
Yeah, we interviewed George Lowe. It was really weird. We didn't know we were going to be interviewing him. And they're like, yeah, he was like a really big Finster fan. He like collected a lot of his art and like knew him very well. And he's just gonna happen to be in town when you guys are filming these interviews. Do you want to interview him? And we were like, what? Yeah. So that was weird and very fun.
And you got a signed Space Ghost card.
Yeah, he was very, very nice. Like, we didn't ask for those. He was just like, he just like brought them. He had like Space Ghost printouts and like signed them for everybody, which was very cool. Very nice of him. Because I try not to ask for anything ever. So yeah, See Unseen World. If you're interested in those types of things, please check it out.
It's good she's the guest for this one.
Yeah. Do you have anything to plug?
We don't. Let's see. We're about to film. We just finished at this time the Seed and Spark campaign for season 2 of Sam and Pat Are Depressed. And that should be coming out early winter, probably. First on Seeker TV, like season 1, and then on YouTube after. In conjunction with that, because we made so much money on the Seed and Spark, like, people were so...
You were over 200%.
Fine. Yeah, because people were so supportive of the show, we will also be premiering a companion podcast to season 1 called Bree and Chris Are Depressed, where we discuss each episode of season one, both like the making of it and also just our real life experiences with therapy and the topic of that particular episode. So that'll be coming out sometime before season two comes out. And that's really fun. If you want to like know more about that or just anything that I'm up to, you can go to my website, which is thechrischerry.com. Someone else owns chrischerry.com and I hate him.
You're the real Chris Cherry.
Yeah, that's what it says on my website. You can go there and see that and other stuff that I've done, including links to all of the episodes of Fastlon that I've been on, including this one.
I like that that's the first thing. If you like go to your stuff, the podcast is before all of your actual things.
Because the other things are like press interviews that are really short, whereas these are a lot more involved. I talk a lot on these.
It's kind of your thing.
Exactly.
But if you like this episode, you can check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. Be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It helps us out a lot. Gets us up in the hierarchy of iTunes, whatever that is. If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to WatchYourAssalon.com/support. And there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, bonus episodes, and live streams where we watch the episodes with you guys. It's a lot of fun. Chris is there almost every time.
Almost every time.
He like co-hosts the live streams.
Kind of. It's like this.
But funnier. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Felicity Cousinitz of the Flopcast for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Felicity.
Hey, thanks, Felicity.
You are the best.
I mean, you will be the best if you get us the fucking receipts!
Tune in next time when we go back to normal and we will be talking about the season finale.
You don't want to like keep this up? Just doing this all the time?
No. Tune in next time when we talk about the season finale, The Seeds of Doom.
That's really good.
With a new guest, Michael Gordon from the ESO Network, ESO Podcast, and other stuff.
Nice.
So keep calm and wrestle on.
I love you.
I love you too.
Wait, do you guys love each other? Are you guys getting married?
Yeah, it's only fair.
We'll all sort of be married to each other.
Just rotate in and out?
Yeah.
We're going to go in and out of each other. All right, goodbye, you guys.
Gross.
I used to have an old gray model before this. Some people liked this.
I did.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Thank you.